Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast for everyone to download and listen to. And today's episode I'm going to be talking about the final book in a 4-book series, or maybe even a 7-book series, it depends how you look at it. It's by R. Scott Baker. It's called The Unholy Consult, and this is one of the most requested books that I've had to talk about and review and read on this podcast for a long time, mainly because it is the last book in a series. Apparently there's more books coming after this in like the larger series, but this is a 4-book series called the Aspect Emperor Trilogy, which turns out it wasn't a trilogy. There's 4 books in this series, and I read the first 2 of this series, really enjoyed them. The 3rd book, really didn't enjoy it very much, and finally this book came out and I was like, you know what, I skipped so much of the last book, the 3rd book in this series, and I wasn't really into it. Shall I even bother finishing off this series? But so many people are requesting it. They're saying, oh, please, it's come out now. Lots of people requesting it, listeners, and other people sort of just in general conversations, or I say general conversations, but chatting on Facebook or something, they'd send me a message saying, are you ever going to get to The Unholy Consult? So I finally got to it, even though it came out earlier this year. In fact, let's have a look on Goodreads. Yes, it came out in July 6th. So yeah, a few months ago. R. Scott Baker, he wrote this series called the Prince of Nothing series, and it was The Darkness That Comes Before and these other books like that. And my kind of reading experience of those 3 books was like, the first book I was like, yes, and the second book in the trilogy I was like, yes, this is great, and the 3rd book of the series was so much of a ho-hum that when I read it I was like, well, that's a very, very disappointing end to this trilogy. In the same way that me and Juliana were talking about how the 2nd book of the Raven Strategy book, the Stratagem book, the follow-up to Nine Fox Gambit, were like, well, it felt like somebody was just like, oh, in this book, what we need to do is do this, and then they just kind of do it. That's what it felt like. It was like the end of the 2nd book was set up so well, and they're like, ah, in the 3rd book, the real struggle is going to be these main characters doing this or achieving this. And then they get there, and it isn't really a main struggle. It's not really a big thing. They just go into it, and they kind of win, and then that's it. There's a big battle, and then you're like, oh, and that was it. And I was like, I don't really feel like the final section of a trilogy should just be like the lead up to a battle, and then the battle, and then them winning the battle. And I was like, where's the drama in that? We know that they're good. It's sort of like the obvious thing is that they're going to succeed and win this battle. Kind of like the 3rd Hobbit movie. It's called The Hobbit: The Five Armies. And you're just like, okay, that's lots of things in there, and there's lots of battle going on in there, but really what we don't really want to see, a whole thing which is just a battle, it's kind of not very satisfying. You want to actually see some real struggles, some people going through stuff, and it just didn't really feel like that after what I really enjoyed about the first 2 books. 3rd book, a bit of a letdown, and I had the same experience now with this 2nd trilogy / 4 book series, whereas like the 1st book I was like, yes, this is good. The 2nd book I was like, yes, this is really good, I'm really enjoying this. And then the 3rd book I was just sort of like ho-hum and sighing and kind of skipping through a bit, because all of this forward momentum that was there in the first 2 books of the first series and the first 2 books of the second series, I'm just like, it all kind of grinds to a halt, and people are just kind of like hanging out in caves talking to each other. And that was like my least favorite part of the 3rd book in both series, of the first Prince of Nothing trilogy and in the Aspect Emperor series. And it got to the point where I was trying to listen to the audiobook, but nothing in my brain could make me concentrate on these really tedious conversations in caves between 2 people, and just sort of looking at stuff, and then, oh, there's this bit of this cave, let's have a look there and here and stuff. And there were some parts of those books that I enjoyed, but in the end what I had to do is go back and listen to it properly and skip over all the parts which weren't in that viewpoint character. So per viewpoint character, I was like, okay, I'll listen to this bit and then listen to that next other viewpoint character all in order. Because all the viewpoint characters were in different parts of the world. They're all kind of in the same kind of area in this trek to the north. But you could read them all disconnected as sort of like different sections. A bit in the way that I kind of feel like you can do with Lord of the Rings in some of those books, like books 4 and 5 or whatever. Or is it books 3 and 4 in the Lord of the Rings? The books within the books, not the trilogy, but like book 3 and 4. It's sort of like this is happening all with this one character. And then over here, there's this other character over there, or these other characters over here, which you're doing. And they're kind of told sequentially per character rather than always switching backwards and forwards between them, and that kind of works there. And I kind of felt that's what I wanted. I was like, okay, just give me all of this character story for this book all in one. And then over here, all of this character story, and I'll see where they match up and where the different armies are. And it felt a bit kind of like that kind of like third book of the Lord of the Rings, where there's battle going on over here, but this person's over here and that kind of stuff. And they don't all come together. So in the end, there was parts which I went back through and did enjoy more, but was lots of skipping over stuff. And then I get into this last book, book number four. And I was thinking, is this going to be the payoff that I want it to be? And in some ways, there is a bit of the payoff that I want it to be, and an interesting turn, and there is a bit of battle. You know, there is a big battle at the end, which, again, I was skipping through a lot of. Any time that it got to a part where it's sort of like, and this person who you've never heard of, who isn't a viewpoint character and you don't really care about, they're now going to do something probably heroic and then die, and then this other magician that you've not actually spent any time with, and they're kind of referenced throughout the book, now they're going to do something big and then do this, and this whole army over here, which you kind of read about in the second book of the first trilogy, they're going to come back in, and that arm is going to do something good, and then they're either going to succeed or, you know, it's all these things. I was just like, this is so tedious to get through. So pretty much I was just like reading the first three words of every paragraph and then just skipping on to the next one. That's how kind of how I, you know, like the first two words and the last three words of every paragraph, and I was just skipping through it. And I'm really pleased that I did that, because it actually got to the, you know, the wrapping up of all of these viewpoint characters. What they were getting up to was actually a little bit more interesting and can spend some time with. So overall, I am pleased that I got to the end of it, but it wasn't a fun experience, because let me put it this way, there is four books in this second series. If it was a trilogy, if these last two books had been condensed down into one novel length, it could have been a bit longer. But in the end, this second half is spread over two books when it should have been one book. And there was so much stuff in these books which I was just like, I don't care about this whole section. I'm not getting anything from here as well. For a lot of the time, it's sort of like this character is doing something, and then they're just talking a lot, and a bit more talking, and then in a cave, and then they're doing this, and then they're and I was like, how many conversations about theology and philosophy can I have between two people in the bottom of a cave? How many times have these armies that I don't care about, and heroes and warriors that I don't care about, who you haven't named up until this point, I just don't care about reading about them. You know, Tolkien had a really good idea in The Hobbit. He's sort of like, and then Bilbo Baggins, who is the character that we really want to care about, he falls over, bumps his head, knocks himself out, and then the other armies do what they need to do, and these other things come in, and blah, blah. You know, it's sort of like, that's the problem, was that the Battle of Five Armies, the movie, got like five paragraphs of a story, which is sort of like, and then a battle happened, and the eagles came in, and the trolls came in, and the orcs came in, and the goblins came in, and the dwarves came in, and the humans came in, and they all fought, and these people won, and over there, oh no, oh yes, they did win. And then they're like, okay, now we've got to spread that out into an entire movie. And that's kind of what I feel like in this book. It's sort of like, what we need is the broad strokes of this battle, and then concentrate on what the individual characters that we actually know and care about are doing. And we didn't get that. Well, we did get what those characters are doing, plus lots of boring battle stuff. So, it should have just been the last book in a trilogy rather than two books spread out. Another thing which is a bit disappointing is that people said, oh yeah, it does end quite, read some comments other places, it ends a bit abruptly. And I know that there's going to be an encyclopedic glossary at the end of the book, but you never quite know how much that's going to be. I didn't expect it to come at 67% of the book, but I kind of suspected that it was coming, because I was like, wow, there's a lot of stuff going on. It's going to be really weird for anything to, this is really big and really meaningful. It's going to be really weird for anything to happen after this. And there's a few more things. I was like, oh, that's even bigger. It's going to be, no, this must be it. It's like, there can't be very much happening after that. And then when something even bigger happened, I was like, well, what's going to happen next? And I kind of turn the page, and it comes up with the, before you go, Amazon says, review this book on the Kindle store or the Amazon store. Do you want to give it one star, two stars? These things, more by Ask Up Backer. Customers who bought this also bought it. And I was just like, that's a really weird way. I don't like it that Amazon does that, that you get to the end of the book, you don't realize you're at the end of the book, and the first sign that you have that you're at the end of the book is turning the page and have other books advertised to you and rate this book on Amazon. That's not kind of what I want to have in my head. At least with an audiobook, I know that it's coming, because there's often music playing in the background. It's sort of like the music swells at the end of the audiobook. And then you go, that was this book by R. Scott Baker, read to you by this. And I was like, okay, that's kind of what you expect at the end of something. You don't expect like trailers at the end of the movie when you're trying to digest what just happened at the end of the book. And a lot of stuff does happen at the end of this book. I don't want to get into too much spoilers. I mean, I will in a second. So yeah, it is very abrupt. And after reading all of that, I was thinking, shall I go into and read some of these appendices? And then I was like, no, there's no point for me to do all of this stuff, which if it's in the appendix, that I should read it to get the full experience of reading the book or the full knowledge of what's going on in the book. Put that into the book. And if it isn't needed for me to enjoy the book, why make me read the appendix, or why put the appendix at the end of the book and read the reading experience of getting only 67% of a book? I think I'm getting 100% of a novel, and then I only get 67% of what I thought I was getting. It's very unsatisfying in that way, and I wish just the stuff was in the book. And maybe it is in the book. I mean, a lot of it is sort of like, oh yeah, well, you probably picked this up all the way through the book, but now here it is. So there is a bit of that. Now, stuff that I did like about this book, which is, it is the, it is a book. This book is kind of about the wrapping up of a world building. It's called The Second Apocalypse. The entire series, including both trilogies so far, is called The Second Apocalypse. And you're like, well, okay, what is an apocalypse and what does it look like when an apocalypse comes? And it is this always foreboding building of things getting ever more grim and ever more apocalyptic. And you're like, that's set up in the first opening, that's set up in the opening prologue of the first book, and it's paid off in this one very well. So I do quite like that. I really like also the idea, like the fake theology. Of course, all theology is fake if you want to look at it, but it's sort of like one person creating a theology and expressing the theology through the way the book works. And I do think it's very impressive what he's done here with the mixing of fantasy theology and magic and gods and all that kind of stuff. And then a spaceship lands and there's other gods that turn up. Or is it a god? Or what are these little things? Are they, you know, these little, I wouldn't say black holes. What do you call it when they're like, when there's just a point in space, which is, you know, like an infinite point or whatever it is. A little discontinuity, a little singularity or something like that. What happens when a singularity turns up? And it's very clear that in this book, that the thing that landed on in Eowa, which is the Earth in this book, is a spaceship. And it's quite clear that what was controlling the spaceship was an artificial intelligence, this techne, this mind of the spaceship that was controlling it. And then other people are taking over the powers that this spaceship has and the different things. And I really enjoy all of that exploration. Unfortunately, that exploration is only a small part of it. And I was like, we could have just been skipping to that, or we could have just been getting to that earlier. Like, did we have to go through a massive slog and a great ordeal to literally the names of things in the books? One of the books is called The Great Ordeal, and other characters go on a slog. And I'm like, okay, I appreciate that we're going on a big slog to get here, but like, a lot of this world building is clouded in stuff. For example, there's battles that go on with laser cannons and atomic weapons, and I'm like, yeah, laser cannons and atomic weapons in my fantasy battles, give me more. That's the kind of thing that sounds really interesting and is really interesting, but it's always clouded by the viewpoints of the characters within this book. They don't know that they're living in a fantasy world which has been invaded by science fiction. And also the gods of this world don't understand the idea of the no god, of this the god which doesn't exist in the world and then turns up. And what's the interaction between this new god turning up, this no god turning up, and the gods that already exist and the other people? Like, who can see what's going on, and why? How do these new gods interact? There's lots of really interesting stuff, and that all pays off in this book in a way which I kind of impressed with and enjoy. But again, the journey to get here, not that enjoyable. Incompatible gods, like turning up in the same world. Like, how do they interact? Are they like magnets, you know, bonding with each other, or are they magnets pushing away, or are there, you know, do they exist on different wavelengths or Planck lengths, or what goes on in that way? There's lots of interesting ideas in this book, which I do enjoy. And again, a lot of the characters that we spend time with are interesting characters. The viewpoint characters are interesting characters and things like that. So there is some stuff going on. Again, I don't want to get into too much now. I'll do some spoilers in a second. Stuff that I don't like about this book is that it is very grim. And I understand the grimness of the book is intentional and is a book that is grim in ways which goes beyond grim in other books. And some of the grimness, I think, is earned, and some of the grimness is kind of a little bit forced in some ways. Like, this book opens, and it is as bleak as all fuck. It is unbelievably bleak. I've never read a book which has lingered so much on cannibalism and necrophilia in the same scenes on such a massive scale as this book. And it, again, that is kind of earned because it's kind of set up as sort of like, yes, this is the shortest path. This is the only way that this succeeds. And I've mentioned before in other book reviews on this series and others, it's sort of like, I really like the idea of, okay, what do we have to sacrifice? What do we have to give up to gain our freedom or to beat the enemy? There's some evil. What do we need to do? What sacrifices do we need to make to defeat this evil, to be free or whatever it's going to be? And this book explores that in a way which is like, again, like, it's bleak, but it's also admirable about it. It's kind of impressive. And it's sort of like, wow, are you going to go there? Right, you're really going there. Oh, and this, are you going to go there? Okay, you're going to go there. And it does get really, really bad. Other parts of the book, which I find a little bit, which don't earn that kind of stuff, is, I don't know, maybe it comes back down to reading this book and just going, oh, it's a little bit racist and a little bit sexist in some ways. But again, the way the book pays it off, you're just like, oh, wow, that's one way of paying that off. But in other ways, I'm just like, yeah, it's still a bit weird. Like, I thought in book two of this series that R. Scott Bakker was going in an interesting direction with the female characters and the place of women in the world, and there seemed to be all kinds of promise there, like, ah, oh, maybe he's doing something interesting. Of course he's been accused of being totally misogynistic in the early books in this series, for good reason. It's a bit rapetastic and a bit, you know, all of the characters are, you know, all the women characters are whores and sluts and all this other kind of stuff, and you're like, ah, it's a bit too much, a bit too full on. In this second book, I was like, oh, maybe he's going in a different direction. This seems to be going in an interesting direction here. So much so that when I actually, did a podcast about it, I think R. Scott Bakker himself listened to the podcast and then linked to it and saying, oh, this is an interesting comment of what I'm doing here. But then the third book, it was sort of like, oh no, women are good for nothing except being vessels for babies, and literally yet the whale mothers, which are just nothing, and women contribute no genetics to the babies, the men's seed is the only thing that means anything, and all these women, I'm just like, that's a bit too much in that direction. And then in this book, it's sort of like, okay, women are powerful, but, you know, we're going to have the main character, one of the main women characters, she's just going to give birth, and this other character is just going to be a forlorn wife who is just dragged into the action with no purpose. And this other character who is really strong and you think she's going to be good. She is good, but her entire scene at the end, she spends half of the book naked, flying around naked, and then being a sex trophy for somebody and then being naked for someone else. You just say, it's not didn't really pay off in that way. It didn't really pay off in the way that I was hoping to. And it was sort of like, it's just so open that it's sort of like, yeah, it's so obvious what you need to do to make this not really uncomfortable reading from a sexist, misogynistic point of view. And he just drops the ball on that one. So it is really disappointing in that way. Which brings me to, I think, I'm pretty much through my notes here, except just to say a bit about the story. But I'm going to get into spoiler territory. So before I wrap this up, I do want to talk about a little bit about just my overall thoughts on this one. Is that this book for me is only a 2.5 star rating. Actually, let me see what the previous series were. Let me just go to episode... author, that's what I need to go. Let me go down to R. Scott Bakker. What did I give The Great Ordeal? Yeah, I gave The Great Ordeal 2.5 stars because there's so much stuff in this, but I can't recommend a book if I'm not even reading every word of it or listening to every part of the audiobook, or I'm just skipping through some stuff because it's just tedious and bleak. It's not the bleak stuff that I wanted to get through. It's when it was that bleak, and then I was like, okay, we've covered this now. Now it's just getting boring. Like, and it's really weird to have such, like, depravity on such a large scale just get a bit boring, and battles on such a large scale just get boring. But in the end, I was just like, nah, bored of this now. It's not really doing anything for me. And that's really surprising for such a big book. But it gets so ponderous. You know, it starts off being a fun, an adventure, whatever, and then by the end, it's like, dum, dum, bum, bum. Boom, and Tolkien does the same thing, to be honest. You know, when you get to the end, especially the movies, you get to the end of it, it's sort of like, fucking hell, more dragging out, tramp into Mordor, big battle. And I was like, you know, Fellowship of the Rings, the only good movie in all six of those movies. Because it is light, it's like, yeah, let's go on an adventure, this journey, we're going towards something. We, as a unit, have got something where we're going, and we're going to get there, and we're going to have troubles along the way to get there. And by the end, it's sort of like, you will knock down this wall, you will beat on this gate. And this just gets even worse than that. So again, 2.5 stars. Let's quickly have a look across on Goodreads. I gave it 2 stars here. See what other readers think. 4.5 stars by search, minus 0.5 stars for the end. Matt says, I don't even know. I need to read more things to understand what happens in this thing. Hooray, now I get to anxiously wait for more books set in this series. Pretty good book, though. Listen to the audiobook when it comes out this week. So, yeah, actually, only a few people have rated it. 5 stars by Nelson Pecora, 4 stars by Andrew. Yeah, it's... I don't know, it didn't land for me. Again, there's a lot of good stuff in it, which is brought down just by, like, bleh. I actually see what I was looking on. Oh, no, that's something else. But yeah, overall, what's that? 3.97 overall. But again, it's that thing, at the end of a series, the only people who are reading the last book in a series are the people who liked the previous books enough to read this one. So I do think it's an overinflation for book 4 or book 7 in a series. So yeah, that's it. Let's get into spoiler territory here. Spoiler horn goes off. Do a spoiler horn. That's not a spoiler horn. It goes like this. Thank you anyway, Juliana. Juliana's sitting next to me on the couch eating some salad. So if you've heard any noises in the background, that's Juliana. All right, spoilers. So, also spoilers. Oh, no, I can't also spoil another. I was going to start spoiling another film, but if people haven't, then it's double spoilers. You've got to. No, I've got to say. Okay, so what happens? I saw a film recently, and when somebody dies near the end of a movie, and their main movie and the main character, you're like, and then the action carries on without them. You're like, oh, okay. So that person died, which means... And they're not going to come back in a clever way at the end, because if they were the main star or the main baddie, they could come... Or the main, like, henchman or something. They can bring that person back at the end to either for them to do a heroic return or to kill them off in a spectacular fashion. But if they're not, like, a main character or main bad person or second character, maybe if they're, like, the fourth character and they die, especially if they're black, it's sort of like, okay, you're now dead. And if that happens, and then that happens again, you're just like, oh, right, so now everyone's going to die. And it gets to that point where one person dies, and it's kind of commented on, and I'm like, oh, I'm only halfway through the book. I didn't know I was actually 80% of the way through the book, because, you know, I knew it was going to cut off, but I didn't know when. But you're just like, ah, we spent all this time. And then at the end of the book, everyone dies. And I'm not just saying that, like, in a, maybe one character will come back afterwards, and actually another character kind of survives in another way. There are a little bit of wiggle room for people to get through the end of this book and to come back in a later book. But it's pretty clear that everyone dies. Like, these earlier people, it's like Prius, and he kind of gets hung up and dies, and you're like, oh, we've spent 7 books with this person, and someone else comes along, and he's like, oh, and then he tries to kill someone and then is killed himself and he dies. And you're like, okay, well, we just spent 4 books with that person, now he's dead. And turns out, yeah, everyone dies. Now, the everyone dying ending is, like I say, it's part of what I find quite admirable about this book. And you're just like, okay, I see what you're doing here. Very good, very good. 10 out of 10 for killing everyone off at the end of it. However, from a storytelling point of view, it did feel a bit weak that all of these characters that we'd either spent 7 books with or 4 books with, especially in the second series, were going off and having their own adventures. And they all get together about halfway through book 4 in this series. And they get together, and most of their stories don't pay off. And the nihilism and the everything is bad and the shortest path to the absolute and all these other things which are in this book, it kind of makes sense that everyone's going to die, whatever. But it just felt like, from a storytelling point of view, it felt a bit weird that Sawwheel, one of the main characters, comes in and doesn't have any impact. And these other characters, who spend a lot of time with them, and it's sort of like, well, what does this person do? Well, she fights a dragon for a while, and it doesn't really matter if she fights the dragon and wins or fights the dragon and doesn't win. She dies at the end of it anyway. And these other characters, you're like, well, did that character die or not die? Well, we didn't see death come swirling down or whatever. And it's just this weird thing, like, just narratively, it's a bit disappointing that if everyone dies at the end and the main objective isn't achieved, That's one thing. The other thing is, like, everyone dies at the end and there's a little bit of glimpse of hope and stuff. It's sort of like, okay, well, there could be some light at the end of this. But just narratively, everyone dies at the end and also no hope, and they don't achieve their objective, and the apocalypse kicks off for real, and everyone dies, and the world is cut off from the gods, so nobody can be damned, because then they can't go into hell and be annihilated and be eaten by a god, and all these other kind of things, consumed by the fire. All the souls will be kept in this world in heads hanging from people's like, it's a bit weird to know, like, what the point. Did they succeed? Did they close off the world from heaven and from the rest of the gods? Did the no god, like, did the done all these kind of things? It's like, that's not paid off and you're just kind of left hanging. So I totally understand why someone's like, wow, okay, the ending let me down, or I've got to read a bit more so I can understand what went on the end there. I understood what went on the end there. I understand the journey that Scott Bakker has taken us along to get there. I admire the guts that it takes to take lots of people along in a book like this. And I'm kind of impressed that his publishers were just like, well, I guess once you're 7 books into a series, the publishers are just like, you know what, these books keep earning money, just do whatever you want, I'm sure they'll be fine. I don't know, it's just one of those things that narratively, it didn't really pay off for me. I was like, if it was just a trilogy and it paid off in this way, I'd be fine. But it got to the point where I was spending a lot of time skipping forward over stuff just to reach people who all die in the end. It's sort of like, all these people who die in the end, what did they do along the way? You're going to find it really boring and it's not going to pay off. And I was like, okay, either I can find it boring and it pays off, or I can not find it boring and it doesn't pay off. But me finding it so boring that I'm skipping and it not paying off at the end and them all just dying anyway and not achieving anything just felt narratively weak for it. So that's all I want to say. The ending is a bit weird. I could get more into what I think about the theology and the cosmology and the philosophy and all the other stuff behind it. But again, I think for me, reading the book, it's clear enough what's going on. I did read some other people on a forum of what they think is going on, and I agree with some of it and don't agree with other parts of it. I think they're reading a bit too much into some things and not enough into some other things. But again, this kind of book is like, you'll get out of it. You'll get out of it something. Maybe it's not what I got out of it, but you'll get out of it something. Right. So I think that's it. You can email me, luke@juggler.net. I do reply to every email that I get. You can recommend books to me. The best thing to do is go over to the Goodreads website, become my friend on goodreads.com, and also go across onto the SFBRP listener group and check out books I would like to see reviewed. In fact, this book here, this series, The Second Apocalypse, reread in advance of The Unholy Consult. People were wondering if I was going to reread the previous books. Nope. I've reread most of them again, but these two last books I'm not going to reread again. I just didn't get enough out of them. So, yeah, there's a whole discussion over there too. So come and discuss with other SFBRP listeners what you think of this book in the Second Apocalypse thing. If you want to recommend a book, drop it in the books I would like to see reviewed. Most people who recommend a book and other people say, yeah, you should read this one, we do get to those ones. For example, what's the most recent one? Someone said Autonomous by Annalie Nevitz. Lindsay recommended that 6 days ago, and both me and Juliana have started reading it already. So, yeah, that's the best way to get me to read something. Mention it in the books I would like to see reviewed discussion, and then check out the rest of them. What other people say, and say yes, go for it. All right, that's it. Email me. No, I said that. Follow me on Twitter. I'm @LukeBurge. Follow me on Instagram. I'm @LukeBurge. Check out YouTube. I'm @LukeBurge. And also maybe check out Science Fiction Book Review Podcast on YouTube too. Might be some goodies there in the future. Right, that's it for me. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.